Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Psychic Teachers Book Club. I'm your host, Samantha Fay.
And I'm Deb Bowen.
And we're so excited to have you here. It is March 16th, almost St. Patrick's Day, and a day away from the Ides of March. Enjoying some lovely spring weather. I'm making myself a cup of tea right now, and we're going to sit and talk about Dan Millman's book, The Way of the Peaceful Warrior.
Which I love this book. It took me a long time to love this book, though. It took me a long time to even agree to read it.
Say some more about that.
And it's been around for a long time.
Mm-hmm. But 1980, it was published in 1980.
Oh, that's right. And, you know, of course, that was the real beginning of, at least where we live, of what was considered the New Age era of literature and whatnot. Because, you know, the word warrior just freaks me out. In fact, if you'd like to hear more about my take on that, that's my most recent blog post on my website. But I came to terms with the term warrior because of this sentence. It's a quote from Socrates, and we're talking about Socrates, who's a character in the book here, not the Greek philosopher. Socrates says, "I call myself a warrior, a peaceful warrior, because the real battles we face are inside us." And I understand that push-pull, light, dark sides of ourselves that sometimes feel adversarial. And with that sentence, I was then able to be open to the incredibly beautiful wisdom in this book.
Yes. Yes. And there is. This is the type of book, like The Alchemist, which we discussed in the last 2 weeks, that you can read again and again and pull something different from each time.
I reread it this past week in preparation for our two shows on this book. And because I'm in a different place, because
right.
I've grown, the book was all fresh and new, and I saw it from a different perspective yet again.
Right, mm-hmm. Which I think is so great
mm-hmm.
when we can do that. Well, let's talk a little bit about Dan Millman first and who he is and, you know, and what he has done. He is still very much alive and still very young. He's born in 1946.
Thank you for saying that's young.
Yes, we're going to stick to that, Deb.
Good, thank you.
what's interesting for any of you out there who love numerology like I do, he was born on February 22nd, which makes him a master number. The 22 is one of the four master numbers in numerology. And if you have 22 in your birth date, it means that you are a master builder. And I think this is true of Dan Millman because he was definitely a master builder, not only with his gymnastics career, but also with this message that he has been teaching in, I think it's 17 books, I'm trying to find it in my notes. He's written so many books that have helped, 17 books that have really helped guide us and teach us to be a peaceful warrior in our own lives. He started out as a child learning modern dance and martial arts and gymnastics. As a freshman at UC Berkeley, he won the Trampoline World Championship in London. And now, you know, I was reading that, Deb, and I was thinking, because now in our little beach town here, we have a trampoline park.
I know we do.
And my kids are addicted to it, and we go all the time. And I was just thinking, wouldn't it be fun to see Dan Millman at a trampoline park?
Yeah, really.
He, after graduation, he worked at Stanford. He coached future Olympian there named Steve Hugg. He coached many amazing and famous athletes. He earned a black belt in Aikido. In 2006, his book, Way of the Peaceful Warrior, was made into a movie with Nick Nolte. Thanks to a lovely friend and listener, I have a copy of that movie. And it's a really good movie. Nick Nolte, I think, does an amazing job playing the character Socrates. But I would recommend that you read the book first. It's definitely not the type of interchangeable movie where I just think you need to read the book first and then watch the movie.
I always think you need to read the book first.
I do, too. There are some, like, the only movie I thought was just as good as the book was The Help.
Oh.
That was such a great movie.
Okay.
Okay, anyway, I digress. So while he was at his junior year at Berkeley, in training to become a world champion gymnast, He was
headed for the Olympics, right?
Headed for the Olympics. He was super famous, like literally on campus. I mean, his senior year at Berkeley, he was voted Athlete of the Year. Like I said, he had just won this world championship. He had girls galore. And everything was just going his way. It was everything that he had wanted. And yet, he was depressed. He was anxious. He was sad. He describes himself as, at the beginning of the book, which is written in the first person, he describes himself as being self-absorbed, egotistical, and experiencing bouts of depression. And he started having nightmares and waking up in cold sweats, and that caused him to go running in the middle of the night. And that's where he met a 94-year-old mechanic.
Who may or may not have been 94.
Right. who he nicknamed Socrates.
And he met him, you know, at a gas station, pumping gas and changing spark plugs.
Yeah, yeah.
And
how would you describe Socrates?
Crusty.
Crusty?
I think of Socrates as crusty. You know, he, infinitely wise, infinitely patient, a very hard taskmaster.
Very hard. He sets Dan on these challenges that I couldn't do, like the challenge with the food stuff and the celibacy.
Yeah.
He gives him all sorts of different mental, physical, and spiritual challenges to help him kind of defeat the shadow side inside of himself.
Absolutely. He was truly a taskmaster on the road to Dan's becoming a peaceful warrior. He was unrelenting.
But there's also something mystical about him. Like, remember when...
When he jumps on the roof and you don't know how he got there? Yeah, there's a lot mystical. Or how does he, you know, where did he pull swords out of nowhere and can move like a cat? And, I mean, yes, he truly has mastered that art of shape-shifting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he really, really has. I love Socrates. I would love to have met this character.
Yeah.
But, you know, as I, in the beginning of the book, when Dan first meets him, you know the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear?
Yes.
Well, I think that is also true the other way. When the teacher is ready, the student will appear.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And I have had that as a teacher in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I have had that happen where I had something I needed to impart, and the student came along to learn it.
Right, right. Matakiasi, we're all connected.
That's right, exactly. So I loved Socrates. I can see why if I were in Dan's shoes, I would have been, I'd have given up. I'd have been horribly frustrated. I would have wondered, what in the world am I doing in a garage in the middle of the night with this crazy old man?
Mm-hmm.
And yet Dan knew at some level, maybe not even consciously, certainly not at the beginning,
right,
that there was a reason he was there.
And, you know, I'm sure some people listening to this are thinking, well, I wish I had a Socrates in my life. And one thing I want to point out is that we do.
We absolutely do.
Yes, we do. And sometimes it's not going to appear to us as obvious as a 94-year-old mechanic at an all-night gas station. But
jump on the roof.
Yes, jumping roofs. But our Socrates appears to us in the form of friends, enemies, books, failures, and successes.
Movies, music.
Yes.
Nature.
Mm-hmm.
Nature. I was telling Samantha before the show started that as I have sat this morning looking out over my backyard, I've had lots of winged visitors in my yard this morning, and I was watching the different kinds of birds come by, and I thought, you know, I haven't seen my cardinal family in a couple of days. And the minute I thought that, Mama Cardinal came and landed on the camellia bush outside my window and looked inside as if to say, well, we're here, good morning. And that's the kind of lessons that the Socrates in our lives teach us, is that if we are connected and aware, the message is there.
That's right. And it's usually us that are running from the message. And I think that's why it's so symbolic that Dan is always running after this nightmare.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, because we do that. We run away from our experiences. And one of the things that Socrates says is that experience is life's teacher. But we must learn from our experiences or they will keep repeating themselves.
Is that not truth?
Yeah.
Absolutely truth, you know.
And the next main thing he says is that you must take responsibility for your actions. And I do think that is something that all of us at different points in our life resist. We are champion blamers.
Yes.
You know, well, if I had had this in my childhood, well, if I hadn't lost that opportunity, well, if only that person hadn't come into my life. But once we are willing to face our shadow side, the warrior, I guess, is what Socrates calls it. I like to call it our shadow side. And embrace our flaws. And I don't mean embrace our flaws like, woohoo, look at me, I can be judgmental. I mean embrace them like, this is a part of who I am. Let me sit with this knowledge. Let me look at my part in this failure, quote unquote, and then surrender it.
Yes. And speaking of experience and knowledge, here's another quote from Socrates. Knowledge alone does not suffice. It has no heart. No amount of knowledge will nourish or sustain your spirit. It can never bring you ultimate happiness or peace. Life requires more than knowledge. It requires intense feeling and constant energy. Life demands right action if knowledge is to come alive. So
yes.
It's that you must act, you must experience. There's a lot of philosophy and concepts in this book that are very Buddhist in their intent.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He quotes the Quran and
the Bible.
But it's really more of a Buddhist philosophy about alleviating suffering through surrender.
Absolutely, yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that he makes Dan Millman realize is that he was addicted to success. And that this need for success and accomplishment and achievement left him depressed. And I think we see that time and again in our own lives and the lives of some well-known famous people, that it's not enough. There's a quote from Jim Carrey that I just adore. He says, "I wish everybody in life could get everything they ever wanted so they would know that it's the answer to nothing."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely true.
Yeah. And so it's what... That hole that Dan Millman had was created by this addiction to success. He was living under this illusion that achievements would bring him happiness. And again, I think this is something we can relate to. Oh, well, when I get that house, I'll be happy. When I get that person in my life, I'll be happy. When I get that child, I'll be happy. When I get that job, when I get that car, that trip, you know, fill in the blank.
Right.
But really, happiness... kind of like Santiago's journey for treasure, you know, it's right where you are. You don't have to go seeking it.
You know, Samantha, maybe a book that we should talk about in the future is Eckhart Tolle's The Power of Now. Because both The Alchemist and The Way of the Peaceful Warrior really did for me drive home the reminder that all I have is now.
Mm-hmm.
That the wants and the needs of the future may or may not ever happen. What I have is right this moment,
mm-hmm.
and I have a choice as to how I'm going to live this moment. Am I happy? Am I content? Am I doing or thinking or feeling what is right for me? And that's a great gift. That is a great gift.
It is.
You know, I've started Tai Chi lessons.
That's right.
I'm really excited about my Tai Chi class. Because and I've just had one lesson, so I'm going back today for my second. But it's very much about being very aware and being present in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that we need to do that even in the dark moments, because that's usually when we tend to run, and we either run by getting angry, by numbing it through alcohol or food,
by being frightened.
By being frightened, by ignoring it, by pretending it's okay.
Right.
It's not that bad.
Yeah.
And I think when we do force ourselves to live in the now and to face exactly what's going on in the now, it helps us to take that right action that Socrates is talking about.
Yes.
He says that becoming a peaceful warrior means learning to be happy with the way life is. And I think for some people that can be really hard. I think the first, at least for me, the first key to finding my happiness was to stop comparing myself to others.
Desiderata.
Yeah.
If you all have not recently read Desiderata by Max Ehrman, please reread it. It is a great mantra to start your day with every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there will always be people greater and lesser than you.
Always. I think Shakespeare said comparison is the thief of joy.
Oh, I bet he did.
And it's very, very true. So you have to learn to surrender to what is and be happy with what is while taking right action to change things that aren't the way you want it to be at this moment. And, you know, we always say, and what's the Martin Luther King quote, when the stairs will appear?
And you can only take them one at a time.
Only one at a time.
Right.
You know, we always say that, too, to our clients when we're doing readings. And I was doing a reading last week for a woman who really, really wants to go back to school, but she doesn't have the money. And the message I kept getting was that the minute she signs up for school and gets accepted, somehow the money's going to appear. Now, unfortunately, her guides did not tell me how that was going to happen. Like
the
a little leprechaun is going to bring it? I don't know.
The how is not your problem. The
yeah.
how is the universe's problem. You know, when I went back to school, when I made the decision to go back to school, my guide said it was time. And I said, okay, I will make the A's. You find the money. And they did. Every semester. Sometimes it was 10 minutes before the deadline of payment before they were going to drop my classes. Sometimes they kept me right on the edge, but every single semester the money came.
Yeah. But we have to, what I've been learning is that we have to take the step first. We have to take the step into the scary unknown before the safety net appears.
Absolutely. I want to say one more thing about that, and then I want to take a break, and then I want to come back and I want to talk about silence. And that is that, yes, we do have to take that step. For me, the perfect metaphor for that is that beautiful scene in the Indiana Jones movie, the one he's in with Sean Connery, and he has to take that leap of faith. Go just Google Indiana Jones leap of faith on YouTube, and the scene comes up. And I just love the illusion of
mm-hmm.
that leap of faith.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm. It is an illusion. Absolutely true. Samantha, we're at the halfway mark, so let's tell people who we are and what we do and why we're here.
Okay.
I'm Deb Bowen, and I am a co-host with Samantha, who will talk about her work in just a minute, of this wonderful podcast that we are just started. This is our third episode. Not quite up on iTunes yet, but it will be, we hope, within the next week or so. And we also offer psychic teachers podcast on Sunday evenings, which is available on iTunes, and which we have been doing for 5 years. So we would love to have you check out that podcast as well. We are, as Samantha has just mentioned, both psychics and intuitive. Samantha is also a medium, and we offer readings and coachings and lots of other services and products. And I will put in the chat room how you can find us as I say that. My website is real easy. It's debbowen.com. If I could spell it, I'd be good. And Samantha's is SamanthaFay.com.
Yes, and it's F-E-Y.
Right, like the fays.
Yes, like the fairy fays.
Like the fairy fays.
Yes, and Deb and I taught in local colleges for many, many years.
Many, many, many years.
And we met each other on our spiritual journey and realized we were both psychics and decided to start working together. And so that's why we named our first podcast Psychic Teachers, because we're psychics and we're teachers. And our goal, really, is to just... We don't claim that we are, like, esteemed teachers who know everything.
No.
Our goal is to just constantly learn and inspire everyone who listens to us to learn and to learn with us.
Right, absolutely. We do. We are grateful for you being with us and hope that you will certainly spread the word about our time together. So thank you all so much for that. Okay, Samantha, I want to talk about silence.
Okay.
Because here's a quote, again, from Socrates. Silence is the warrior's art, and meditation is his sword. With it, you'll cut through illusions. But understand this, the sword's usefulness depends upon the swordsman. If you don't know how to use the weapon properly, it can become a dangerous, deluding, or useless tool. Meditation can initially help you to relax. You may put your sword on display, proudly showing it to your friends. The gleam of the sword distracts many meditators until they abandon it to seek other esoteric techniques. In contrast, the warrior uses the sword of meditation with skill and understanding. With it, he cuts the minds to ribbons, slashes through thoughts to reveal their lack of substance. And so that's just kind of the beginning of his ongoing conversation in the book about meditation. And sitting in silence is as necessary for me as breathing. I know it is for you too. Mm-hmm. We both have to have our meditation time. Mm-hmm. But one of the new layers of the onion that I peeled away in rereading this book this time is that meditation isn't enough. That sitting in silence isn't enough. That there has to be a deeper connection to all that is in that meditative process. I'm not quite sure what that means yet. I'm just sitting with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's going to teach me a new way to think about that sitting in silence time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I always think of like an ocean with the waves are coming in and coming in and coming in, and you can't see the bottom of the ocean. But when that water stops and everything is completely still, you can see right to the bottom of that ocean. And that's what I think about stillness. We can't see ourselves. We can't know ourselves until we can sit in silence and stillness with ourselves. And for some people, I think that might be really scary.
Uh-huh.
You know, when my kids were young, I was always moving and doing and going and going and going. I was afraid to stop and sit still because I would probably fall asleep. And I remember my therapist said to me, all you're doing is distracting yourself, and you've got to stop distracting yourself, and you've got to sit in silence. And that's when, I had 3 kids in 3 years, so they're really close in age, and when they were all still in diapers and babies and napping and all of that stuff, I set up a little altar in my walk-in closet off my bedroom, and I had my little saint statues and my little angel statues and my candles, and I would sit on the floor of my closet and close the door, and that's where I would meditate. You know, now they're older, and so they're in school, and so I can meditate during the day whenever I want. But it just reminds me that even in the busiest time of your life, it's so important to carve out just a moment of silence and to not be afraid of that silence.
No, because, you know, I think often we think of meditation as that emptying your mind,
mm-hmm.
and certainly that is one style of meditating. But a lot of times, for me, that meditative process is just being still with the thoughts and feelings that bubble up.
That's right.
And allow them to bubble, because those are my teachers, too.
Mm-hmm. And see what comes and don't. And I think, too, you know, so many people will email us and say, how do you meditate? What's the right way to meditate? I don't think there is a way to meditate. I don't think there is a right way or a wrong way.
There's not.
I think it's just setting the intention to sit with yourself.
Well, you don't even have to sit. I have a download on my website of just an introduction to several different kinds of meditative techniques that people might like. And you can walk. You
yeah.
can dance. You can drum your meditation. There are lots of ways of meditating.
I don't know if it's Wayne Dyer or Deepak Chopra or both of them, because they give a lot of talks together. But one of them was giving a huge talk about meditating, very, you know, involved about how you meditate. And this older woman was sitting in the front row nodding enthusiastically. And Wayne Dyer or Deepak Chopra said, oh, you understand, you meditate? And she nodded. And she said, yes, I knit every day.
And that's a meditation for you, because you
it
knit.
Is.
Yeah.
The repetitive action. And I think, too, if you have a monkey mind like I do, I'm a Gemini, and my mind's always going, 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 and It's very hard for me to sit still. So I will try to distract my body by knitting, crocheting, drawing. You know, doing a lot of creative work helps me to meditate.
Mm-hmm.
But I meditate sometimes when I'm washing dishes.
Oh, absolutely. I love walking meditation. And whenever I travel, if I'm going someplace new or someplace I've been before sometimes, I will research to see if there are labyrinths in that community. And I will always walk a labyrinth in every new place I go.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's a great way of connecting to the energy of the place. It's a great way of setting my intentions for my time there. And it's a great way of just honoring that space and giving me time to settle in.
And, you know, your higher power, your guides, your angels, your loved ones on the other side, they're always trying to talk to you. They're always with you. And I think you have to look at what's going on in your life to recognize that. Like with Dan Millman having the depression, having the anxiety, having the nightmares, that was a wake-up call for him. That was his guide's way of saying, hello, we're not happy, something's wrong.
Something's wrong, and there's somebody out there for you. Let's check it.
So,
let's go check out this gas station.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, think about when you're driving your car and the light turns on. It's not a bad thing. I don't think we need to judge it. So if you're depressed or you're anxious, I don't think we need to judge it, like, what's wrong with me? It's simply your body's engine's way of saying, help, we need to switch tracks. We need to do something different.
And you know, that's an interesting point. We quote in the chat room, somebody's written in the chat room about sitting just doesn't work for this person. So think about this. Dan Millman's running at the beginning of the book was indeed his attempt to run away from.
Mm-hmm.
But later in the book, after he meets Joy, his running becomes a meditation. It becomes a prayer.
Mm-hmm.
So... you know, he shifted that the intent of that same energy.
Yeah.
So we don't have to just sit to meditate. There are lots of ways of meditating.
I wish running was my form of meditation.
Just sounds like hell to me.
My sister runs all the time. She's doing a half marathon this weekend, and she says that it gets the bad mojo out. And I think that's so true for meditation. It gets all the yuckies out.
Well, it does, but I'm not going to run to chase them.
I know.
It's not going to happen.
I wish I were a runner. I think it'd be cool, but alas, that's not my way or yours. And so you always have to find your way.
That's right.
And you can't, again, judge yourself, like, well, this is a good way, that's a bad way, this is a better way. Just accept. And, you know, I wanted to say, too, because so much in the book is about denial in the beginning when Socrates is teaching him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I've always resisted. You know, growing up Catholic, I used to hate Lent because I would be like, okay, does Jesus really care if I eat meat on Thursday but not on Fridays? Is he really up there, like, checking something off, like, oh, Samantha, mm-mm-mm. You know, or, like, if I give up Diet Coke for 40 days, is that really going to garner me, like, a higher level in heaven? Like, it really bothered me. And a priest once told me, no, God could give a care about that. But what it's doing is it's building up your spiritual mastery. It's building up your ability to master temptation so that you can see the bigger things in life. And I still kind of have an issue with that, but I understand it. And I think that's what Socrates was trying to teach Dan, that we have to build up this resistance to our shadow side.
And that it doesn't happen all at once, you become, which is a quote from The Velveteen Rabbit, which is another one of my favorite books.
Yes.
We are out of time, Samantha. We will finish this conversation next week. We got a lot of notes from people who said that they had read the book in preparation for the show, and that's so exciting to us. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
So we will finish this conversation about The Peaceful Warrior next week at this same time.
And if you have questions you want us to discuss on air about the book, email them to us, psychicteachersbookclub@gmail.com.
And in the meantime, everyone be the light.
Have a great day.
Good night. Goodbye. It's morning. Thanks, folks. Bye-bye.